This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
God, is that private party?
The revolution is televised.
The doctor will see you now.
Everybody.
Join the Dark Order.
Wrestling has more than one royal family.
You're listening to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling. It's all part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andrew Rich. This is episode 98, and it is an All Elite Wrestling grab bag. And today I am joined for the first time by a contributor at Voices of Wrestling, someone who I name-dropped on the last episode because we share a birthday. It's Steve Case. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Andrew. December 2 babies unite. No, I appreciate the shout out. I was going to say something, but I completely forgot. Thanks for the shout out last week. I am the ripe old age of 33, in case you were wondering.
So you got a few years on me, but not too much there. So
no, 28 and 33. It's like demographics. It's all the same age, right?
Oh, yeah. Pretty much Irish twins, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, I'm glad you're here, definitely. You know, it's funny, though, that you're on the AEW episode because around the VOW Slack chat, it's sort of become like a running joke that you're the last remaining WWE guy on the website because you review the takeovers and some of the main roster pay-per-views. And whenever there's like a big WWE show coming up, it's like, who's going to review this? Steve, you're up, pal. So I'm glad we could buck that trend and have you on this episode here.
Well, I appreciate that. And I don't mind it. It is what it is. You just kind of take the WWE shows in a vacuum. The good thing is my girlfriend, has bless her heart, has been very supportive and actually finds ways to enjoy them while I review them, or she just falls asleep and it's just fine that way too. So, but yeah, I don't mind doing it. Earlier this year that we didn't review a show because I was busy and I didn't realize it until last minute. And I felt so bad that I was like, I don't want to be the reason why they don't review a show again. So that's why I've always kind of tried to step up to the plate when I can, but it's been tough. It gets tough. Hard to look forward to some of those shows for sure.
Yeah, thank you for your service, by the way, because some of those shows, I mean, oh my God, the takeovers are generally better, I think, but
right.
Those main roster shows can be, oof.
Yeah.
Oof, not good.
I haven't pulled I'm sure there's probably more, but just in my time at the site, like Kelly and Garrett no longer have anything to do with them. I don't know if it's post-traumatic stress disorder or something from reviewing those shows, but it hasn't hit me yet, so I'm knocking on wood right now.
Yeah, it's like the Raw reviews or World Tag League. They get their man eventually.
You know, right?
You can hold out as long as possible, but they'll get you in the end there. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, since this is your first time on the show here, Steve, I'll ask you this. When did you become a wrestling fan? How'd you get into it?
So my first memory as a human being, I was sitting at my kitchen table while my mom was moving into the house that I actually started to grow up in. I had one of those old school, foot tall rubber Hulk Hogan and Jesse Ventura action figures and playing with them in a wrestling ring. And it's just been a part of my life, my entire life. It's kind of funny, people come and go in your life. And it seems like, doesn't matter how long it's been since I've talked to somebody, I'll always get random texts or social media posts or something like, oh, I just saw this commercial with the Undertaker or Hulk Hogan. And I thought of you, hope you're doing well. People I haven't heard from in years. And That's just kind of always been my thing. Like, I've always just been the wrestling guy. And there were a lot that I grew up with, but they all grew out of it, and I'm still a large child. So it works just fine.
And has music played a big part in your fandom at all?
I mean, obviously the classics. Like, I mean, I'm not ashamed to say it. Say what you will about him now, and everything is true. But I grew up a Hogan guy. Always was. Always love. Always have a soft spot in my heart for late 80s, early 90s Hogan. So Real American was my stuff back in the day. I mean, but like, I mean, the iconic ones like Hogan, Warrior, Undertaker, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, like all of those. I mean, I've enjoyed them. There's always been ones on my workout playlists and running playlists. Not so much recently, though, which is why I was kind of excited you asked me to do this. And I was able to kind of dive a little deeper into some of these AEW themes.
Yeah, that is the topic du jour, this selection of AEW themes. I know I did like a short solo episode at the beginning of the year about a few AEW themes, but this is the first proper co-hosted episode about AEW. New intro and everything, too. And, you know, AEW, All Elite Wrestling, they're about to finish their second year as a company, their first full year running shows with Dynamite, Dark, and the pay-per-views. And it's been quite the year, that's for sure. I mean, they're still a very young company, figuring things out, what works, what doesn't. But they've been doing all this in the middle of a pandemic for like 90% of the year. Whether you agree or not that they should be running at all, they've been running. In fact, at this point, there have been more AEW shows with limited or no crowds than there have been with full crowds, which is nuts to think about, you know, but to their massive credit, they've persevered really well. And, you know, they've adapted to problems that have gotten in their way with aplomb. I think it's actually one of the company's best attributes, Steve.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree. Like, I mean, I think anybody that knows me, especially in the Slack, knows that I'm a huge AEW mark. So, I mean, I've loved it. It's really kind of carried me through. I've got a group of buddies. Shout out to Nick and Dane from the Mid-Card Matinee podcast. Rest in peace. Got to get that plug in there. Sorry. But we always get looked forward to. I mean, we've had our ups, like everyone's had their ups and downs during the pandemic, and things going well, things going poorly, things just kind of existing. But like, it seems like every Wednesday AEW has been there for all of us, and we always get excited for it. But yeah, like you said, I mean, their ability to handle adversity, whether it's the pandemic with the no crowds, which I mean, maybe people have done it better in spots, but I think on a consistent basis, they've probably been the best one of all of the promotions that have tried this. Say what you will about Thunderdome or what New Japan's doing with the clap crowds, but I think they've done the best job out of all of the promotions as far as keeping things fresh and keeping things lively. And it's kind of funny, like you mentioned, they've had more non-fan shows than they've had fan shows. Probably a little bit later today, I have to review a match, the Pac Kenny match, the Iron Man match from February for the For Your Consideration series that I guess South Dakota Jones, I don't know if that's his name, but is putting together. But and that had fans. So I'm kind of like interested to see what that's going to actually look like, because I loved that match at the time. But it's going to be weird to watch it now after what's been 9 months with no fans or very little to no fans. So yeah, it's they've done a great job. I mean, like I said, I'm usually higher on them than a lot of people are, just because I absolutely adore it. But I mean, I don't think you can really argue the fact that they've done a pretty good job, all things considered, with the adversity.
Yeah, you brought up that Pac-Kenny match. I think back to the start of the year and the build up to Revolution and Revolution itself. I mean, that is legit like some of my favorite TV wrestling ever.
Oh, God. You know,
great
absolutely.
Angles, great matches, hot crowds, a lot of momentum. That February 19th Dynamite in particular, which had Cody versus Wardlow in the cage, it had Kenny and Hangman versus the Lucha Brothers, the Tag Team Battle Royal, the Moxley versus Cobb match with a Darby return. Like, that's a wrestling show that'll stay with me forever, I think. It was so great. And all of a sudden, COVID hits, and all that momentum and atmosphere just comes to a halt. And it was crushing. It was really crushing. But slowly but surely, I feel like they've managed to get that momentum back in a lot of ways. I know the most recent Dynamite ratings were the best of the entire year, and they put on some really great wrestling and great angles and feuds despite the limitations of the pandemic era, which is very commendable, Steve.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of funny. Like, we were what, a week, 2 weeks away from getting a blood and guts War Games match, like an old school blood and guts War Games match. Like, and it just, it's weird because I mean, like you said, they were so, like, it felt real hot going into Revolution and through. I mean, and that show itself was just fantastic. And I mean, it felt like they were really starting to build and build and build. So you kind of wonder just how much different it would be had the pandemic not hit. Like, would, I mean, obviously they're gaining momentum now and have been really strong lately with some angles and some stories, and the ratings, like you said, have been best it's been all year. But like, where would it be had the pandemic not hit? It's just, it's a weird thing to think about, since it's almost normal that we're in the situation we're in now. But like, would they still have that momentum? Would it have been even bigger since they were on such a roll early in the year? It's just, it's funny to think about what ifs like that. And I think that's something that people might think about for a while, depending on how things go moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's perfect by any stretch. You know, no. There are some things that I don't like about AEW. Some wrestlers, some segments. JR at times does get on my nerves a little bit. All Out this year was not a good show overall. And some Dynamites have definitely been better than others. But the thing is with them, they have my trust.
Yeah.
And they have my confidence that they can bounce back from, you know, whatever hardship or downtrend that they go through. So, you know, on the whole, like you, I'm a big fan of them. And I want AEW to succeed and be around for a long time.
Yeah, I think people might probably argue with me if I said that I wasn't in love with everything. I mean, but that's just, that's between me and the slackers, I guess you could call them. So, there is no such thing as a perfect promotion. But like you said, it seems like as soon as they do something that maybe doesn't land or doesn't or is universally panned, they pivot and they adapt and they evolve and make chicken salad out of chicken shit. Really, I mean, if you want to put it that way, can I swear? Is that a thing I can do?
Oh,
here?
You can swear to your heart's content. Don't worry about it.
Okay, great.
Look, to me, any company that puts Eddie Kingston on national TV with a live mic and tells him just talk gets a gold star in my book. You know, same for Moxley, same for Cody, Ricky Starks, Taz. Like, it's such a breath of fresh air compared to WWE that guys can just talk naturally and be themselves. And it's awesome, Steve.
It's so hard to watch that now. Like, that, I mean, I've like you said, I review most of the pay-per-views, and there have been some good matches and some matches I've really liked. But like, their WWE's video packages are usually great to kind of get you up to date before the matches, the build, so you know what's going on. But how someone can watch how many hours of television they have on TV a week and just listen to that just rehearsed, just soulless, lifeless speak that they talk into the camera, it's horrible. Like, I don't know how anybody can get into that. It just... human beings don't speak like, robots don't speak like that. It's just crazy to me. And like you said, I'm one of the last WWE guys, quote unquote, and I grew up on it and I loved it for years and years and years. And I can't tell you the last time I watched an entire episode of Raw or SmackDown. Like, it's probably been at least 2-3 years.
Yeah. It's not good. That's all you can say, really, is just, it's not good. Now, as far as the music goes in AEW, Mikey Ruckus, he's the one who does all the in-house music for them. And I've been listening to a lot of his themes because they're available on Spotify and Bandcamp, which I very much appreciate, by the way, that these songs are all available in studio quality because, you know, this podcast needs that stuff. And I've seen a fair amount of criticism towards his themes, that some of them don't have a catchy and distinguishable hook, and as a result are just kind of there and unmemorable. And to be honest, I do get that with some of his themes. You know, QT Marshall's theme, The Gun Club, Luther, like, those are not number one hit tunes. But I do want to stick up for the guy, because from my perspective, the thing about Mikey Ruckus is that while he can and has made some very catchy and distinguishable themes, including on this episode here, what I think his greatest strength is and what he focuses on with his music is finding the right mood and the right sound that fits the wrestler. He's really, really good at that. Like, for example, the Jurassic Express theme. That's not the catchiest song in the world, sure, but it fits the group to a T. The Indiana Jones jungle adventure music, it's perfect. Same with, like, the Dark Order and their creepy cult music. You know, same with Joey Janela and his 80s metal. Pack, dark and dour and frantic. Matt Sydal is very fast-paced and triumphant. Hybrid 2, of course, with their dancey electronica. You know, the list goes on and on. You hear those themes, and they sound like they belong with those wrestlers. Is every theme a memorable, catchy hit? No, but his bread and butter is figuring out which styles and sounds and, I guess, musical pastiches work for which wrestler. And I think he succeeds very well in that regard, Steve.
Yeah, no, I that's a great point. Like, I mean, we're going to go over some of these themes, like you said. And and for the most part, I would agree with you. I think almost all of these, for maybe one of them, we'll get to it when we get there. Maybe one of them, I would argue, maybe doesn't fit quite well, but the rest, like all of them, like I know one of them we're going to talk about is Ricky Starks. And it just, to me, that one makes perfect sense. MJF makes perfect sense. Like, it's one of those things, like, I can't place the words, like, why it works for those people, but it just does. And yeah, and some of them are even more spot on. So,
yeah. And the thing I like about him too, is that he's very open about his thought process behind his themes. He talks all the time on Twitter about which bands and which songs and genres he was thinking of when he made the themes. Like, for example, Eddie Kingston. Kingston's theme sounds a lot like a DMX song.
Yeah.
Well, he said point blank, yes, I was going for DMX. Like, no bones about it. Marco Stunt's new singles theme sounds a bit like We Belong by Pat Benatar. Again, he openly admits that he used that song as inspiration for this one. The Kenny Omega Prelude music. Rich Craich pointed out that the first half sounds like the song Sirius, the Chicago Bulls entrance music, whereas Joel Abraham said that the second half sounds like music from the movie The Running Man. Well, it turns out they're both right. That's what he was going for. So that openness is pretty refreshing, I think, and a cool insight into his process. And in a lot of cases, too, he said that his ideas for themes and which artists and sounds he wants to go for is done in tandem with the wrestlers. He'll talk with the wrestlers and listen to their suggestions and brainstorm ideas to help make their themes, which I think is also pretty cool and gives those songs a personal touch. You know, these are not songs that were picked from a library like in so many other promotions, but these songs were made for the wrestlers and in some cases by the wrestlers.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're teaching me right now, because I mean, I was aware of Ruckus making a lot of these and being a part of a lot of these, but I guess I didn't know a lot about the process or the backstory. So I mean, a lot of these, I put down some bands and some genres that I thought of when I listened to them. So maybe I'm right, maybe I'm way off, but it'll be cool to kind of bounce those off you and see what you know and see what he has to say.
Right. And, you know, all in all, he's just a great musician, too. Like, on a technical level, all his themes are very good. I mean, he made that new Sting theme, and that's fucking amazing.
That's incredible.
It's like the best theme he's ever done, and one of the best themes in wrestling right now, I think. And that's due to him not just playing all the parts well and getting the production right, but also it's because he's a wrestling fan, and he knows his history with the Sting themes, and he evokes that sound of the old Sting Crow theme and Metallica and all that, but he's not copying them verbatim. Rather, he's making a new theme that feels like an evolution of those themes and tips the cap to them, but doesn't feel like a retread. It feels new, and it's fantastic, Steve.
Yeah, Totally agree. Totally agree. That Sting theme is, I mean, it's one of the better ones I've heard in a long time, to be honest with you, of any promotion, really.
So let's get to these themes here. We have 10 songs to play, and a good bunch of them are indeed by Mikey Ruckus, but some of them are also by other artists, which is another cool factor of AEW, is that they allow some outside artists to do themes, like for Darby, Lance Archer, Kenny, Cody, Jericho, of course. So we'll feature a mix of in-house and outside stuff today.
Excited to talk about them. My two favorite passions, wrestling and music, so let's do this, baby.
Okay, so let's start off with Scorpio Sky, one third of SCU and one half of the first AEW Tag Team Champions. Scorpio's singles theme is called Reach for the Sky.
Reach for the sky! Full flex on your dreams. Race it to the top, show the world what it means. Tackle any obstacle that's put in front of me. Throw your hands in the air if you're riding out with me. It's my time to shine. Muster up the strength, pull it back and let it fly. Laser line focus, cause this moment is mine. Now the cat is out the bag and watch me reach, reach for the sky.
This one, it's got an old-school 90s hip-hop vibe. Mikey cites Down With The Kings by Run DMC as inspiration. It's your classic hype-up rap theme about going to the top and being the best. Reach for the sky, not just a good name pun, of course, but also the overall message of the song. Racing to the top, show the world what it means. Tackle any obstacle that is put in front of me. It's my time to shine. It's just a real solid face theme, Steve. I enjoy it quite a bit.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it really grabs you right off the bat with that reach for the sky. And then it's like, okay, one, that's a great way to start a song. And two, you know it's Scorpio Sky. And it's a great play on words. And I'm one for one because in my notes I put very Run DMC old school hip hop. Just kind of, it's fun, it's upbeat, but it hits hard enough where, you know, like, this guy is going to come down and do some damage. So, and obviously the message of the song is great and kind of tells his story, which if you watch AEW, you've seen some of the vignettes that he's been a part of. So, I mean, I think it fits him, like, really, really well.
Yeah, I get the visual in my head of, like, a dominant basketball hype video. You know, yeah. Some guy just being a monster on the court and dunking on everybody and shooting threes. Like if this was in The Last Dance during a montage of Jordan being an absolute beast, it would not be out of place at all, I don't think. If you're standing in my way, pushing through the crowd while I head into the fray, watch me real close, history is on the way, bow down with the king, watch the people start to sway. I think Scorp would prefer Kobe to Jordan, given his SoCal roots, but there is that comparison to the high-level athlete who is taking charge and rising up and being the best in his own sport.
Yeah, I mean, keep reaching higher and like not being satisfied with where you're at. And to go on to the basketball theme that you brought up, I mean, my background, I was in college coaching for a while and recruited and watched tons of highlight tapes and highlight videos and with student athletes putting in just the worst kind of rap music and music in the background. And something like this would fit something like that perfectly. So I totally get what you're saying.
I also like too, how it's a completely different sound and style than the SCU theme, mm-hmm. You know, which is dude bro rock music.
Yeah.
I like that because, you know, this is supposed to be a solo theme for Scorpio Sky. It's his own thing. And the whole point of him going solo is to branch out from SCU, to go his own way. So it makes total sense then that his theme song would also go its own way.
Yeah, and I mean, it just, and it's instantly recognizable. Like a lot of these themes, and I think a good theme, really, it really just grabs you in that first note or that first line, and that reach for the sky right at the beginning, just kind of really kicks it off and just starts the ball running downhill and keeps going and going.
Definitely, definitely. Let's go over now to the AEW Women's Division, the much talked about AEW Women's Division. And we'll look at the theme for the super bad girl, Penelope Ford, fiance of one Kip Sabian. And, you know, for the record, I'm not a big Kip Sabian fan, but I gotta admit, he's a very lucky man. Penelope's theme is called Super Bad Girl. This one is definitely going for surf punk. I think that's fairly obvious. But actually, there was a certain song that it reminded me of, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And then it hit me. There's a song by the Dead Kennedys called Police Truck that sounds a lot like this one, the same vein. This one, though, a lot less political than that one. but still, I think this is one of the more underappreciated themes in the company. This is a very fun song, I think. A good balance between, you know, the pop bounce and the punk edge. Great for Penelope, the super bad girl. She's devious, but she's also, shall we say, quite the looker, too. So I think that fun, bubbly, surfy, but also, you know, chuggy punk rock dynamic, it works well for her character, Steve.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of the same way with you. I'm glad you said surf, pop, punk, because that was kind of what I was thinking. I put, like, pop alt, like that early 2000s, like your Alien Ant Farms, your Bloodhound Gangs, to a better extent, your Offsprings, those kind of bands that were kind of popular in that late 80s, early 2000s era, that were really popular with all the girls that I grew up with. I was not a fan of that music back in the day, but, you know, my thoughts have grown and my taste have evolved since then. The intro, I don't know, maybe this is just me, but the intro where it's just kind of like the like right at the beginning reminded me of like the if you know the intro to Human Fly by the Cramps.
Oh yes.
I felt that's what I got from that, and then it just kind of like it's like that and then it kind of just goes right into that pop surf punk alt band alt rock kind of stuff. And when I saw this one on there, I was like, that's probably not going to be very good. But you're right. It actually, if you listen to it, I mean, it's really good. It's a really good song. I mean, it's a really good intro song for her. I mean, it's got the, you know, like the upbeat kind of athletic. I mean, there's like a sex appeal to it. So that works for her, obviously. And she's a super bad girl. She's going to do super bad things.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because she's not a surfer girl. That's not her gimmick, but she's definitely the girl in the beach movie who's like super hot and will hang out with the douchey jocks and kick sand in people's faces and make fun of all the nerds. Like, that's her energy to a T. And the lyrics line up with that, I think. She's the one you call in a fight and she don't play nice. She's a super bad girl. Cause a scene and she'll do it in spite, then set it right. She's a super bad girl. Do what she wants to the 100th degree, leave you in the debris for so many to see. Yeah, you will never forget this one right here. She's a super bad girl. It actually kind of sounds like a TV theme in a way to me. Like that energy, that cadence with the super bad girl. It has that like catchy rhythm to it. So yeah, overall, this is definitely a great song for her, you know, bubbly bad girl vibe.
Well, I think the idea that's the sitcom thing that you've talked about is really spot on. Cause I mean, you can almost see it like like every time it says she's a super bad girl, and it's like the, you know, like that surfer like script wording with the bubble wording that comes up, super bad girl, and like she's just in like different poses on the beach, or like maybe she's like a secret agent or something like that, running from people, shooting people, whatever. But no, it would work just fine for that as well. And I mean, that's the thing. She's sexy, but she's still a badass. And that's kind of what they're going for. And it works.
Well, originally the song was called Bad, Bad Girl. And the line was, she's a bad, bad girl. Because beforehand, she was with Joey Janela, the bad boy, and she was just the bad girl. But now she's with the Kipster, so they changed it.
Here's a question for you. Did she trade up, trade down, or stay the same?
Well, no offense to Joey, but I do think Penelope traded up for sure, because Kip is a hunk, you know? But to be fair to Joey, he's now dating Brandi Lauren, and she's also super hot. So I think Penelope traded up, but Joey is a wash, because he still has a hot girlfriend.
Good for both of them.
So up next, we'll look at another women's theme. This is for the native beast, Nyla Rose, a former women's champion. Her theme features Donna Thornton Long on vocals. It's called Beast Bomb. So this one follows in the same vein as themes for like Awesome Kong or Umaga, the monster theme. And that makes sense given that Nyla is the monster of the women's division. And it plays up that whole jungle monster motif with the primal scream at the beginning, the tribal elements like the ooh, ha, ooh, ha vocals and the flutes. Then there's the more deliberate pace of the song as set by the drums. And of course, that badass guitar riff at the center of it. It's meant to convey something scary, something to be feared, colossal, not of this civilized world, a beast. And it checks all the boxes for what I consider to be a good beast theme, Steve.
Yeah, no, I think it starts out great. It really, when I first heard like the start of it, you get that sense of dread. It almost kind of reminded me of one of those old TNA Samoa Joe themes. Like with the, I don't even know what the sound is, like
the Godzilla melody. Yeah.
But here's my problem with it, because it's got a good theme, good music, but then when the people start singing, all I could think about was This Is Halloween from Nightmare Before Christmas. And because it sounded like that, like the same cadence, dun 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 dun, like it, and it was the voices sounded like it too, and I just, from that point on, it kind of took me out of it as being like a badass, and I kind of started laughing a little bit. So but I mean, the music's great. I think it would be one of those themes that maybe if it didn't have lyrics, it might work better. That's just my take, but I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, the vocals are rather theatrical and over the top for sure, but I think it's a rather theatrical and over the top kind of song. And wrestling itself is often quite, you know, theatrical and over the top.
Sure.
And the lyrics are right there too, you know. Here comes a beast to cast asunder, breaking wreckage, pillage and plunder. Time for the slaughter, her eyes grow colder, carry the victims over her shoulder. Oh, bow to the beast. Oh, bow to the beast. It's a little cartoonish, yes, but What I like about it is that the lines are repeated. They're done in like a call and response manner. Again, playing up the tribal aspect. It's like a tribal ritual summoning the beast. So not only do the lyrics work, but the way the vocals are arranged, it adds like a little extra layer of character to the song.
No, I really think everything about this would be fine, and probably even the lyrics would be fine. I just, in my head, I can't get over the sound of the voice. Like, I hear that, and I'm thinking of like the claymation dogs and the ghosts and Jack Skellington jumping on a hill. Like, that's all I could think about. So, but I mean, you're right. It meets the theme, like the tribal theme, because obviously with her background, and also the spread of doom and dread of what's to come, because she's a monster, she's a beast. Just I think if the way the lyrics were delivered, I guess, was a little different, it might work a little bit better for me.
Have you ever heard of a band called The Who?
Oh,
not
God,
the British yeah. band, not oh. them. Sorry, I should have prefaced that beforehand.
No, that's fine.
Not them, not WHO. The Who, as in HU. They're a Mongolian folk metal band who incorporate traditional Mongolian instruments and throat singing. They're awesome. And Mikey Ruckus has said that he used one of their songs called Wolf Totem as the basis for this theme. In fact, when you hear the oh, that's him doing his best Mongolian throat singing.
Interesting. I'll have to. I have not heard of Who HU, but I am definitely going to look that up, because that's. I don't know if I've. I know I've heard some of like the throat singing that you're talking about. I mean, I'll have to check this song out though, because that's interesting.
Yeah, they're an awesome band. No idea what they're saying, of course, but
right?
They're an awesome band for sure. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, up next, Steve, I have very, very good news, because it's time to celebrate Wardlow Day. Mr. Mayhem, Wardlow, the bodyguard for MJF. And, you know, wrestling fans, we don't agree on everything. Oftentimes we're very divided, but something we can all come together on is the greatness that is Wardlow. His theme is called This Is War.
This is war.
A couple things. If you had a wrestling theme called This Is War, chances are it'd sound like this 10 times out of 10, right? Like, you're not getting bubblegum pop or down-tempo chill. No, you're getting crushing riffs and screaming vocals. You're getting metal to the max, because this is Mikey's wheelhouse. He is a metalhead through and through. He loves the riffs. And you know what? It's Wardlow, Mr. Mayhem. He's a big, beefy boy who throws people around. I say give the man his riffs, Steve.
Oh, yeah. No, this, I totally agree. Like, I mean, This Is War is just a great intro. I mean, what else are you going to think about when you hear This Is War screamed at the top of someone's lungs, and then that dude walks out, like, run to the hills. Like, that's, I mean, pun not intended, beat the metal tie-in, but yeah, it's a great, it's that, it's really good. I wrote, it's very like Slipknot meets Seven Dust kind with the, with some of the music. Very, very angry, very destructive, very, very Wardlow, really. Very Wardlow, just, it works.
Well, you got the right genre with those bands you mentioned, because this is one of those cases where Wardlow worked with Mikey on the song. Apparently, okay, he told him, I want Disturbed meets Breaking Benjamin.
Oh,
and you hear
okay
this, and damn it, if he didn't deliver Disturbed meets Breaking Benjamin, because some of those vocals are as close to David Draymond as you can get, really.
Yeah.
A little Pantera thrown in there, too, with the Screamo stuff, I think. But yeah, Slipknot, Seven Dust, whichever. It's the perfect early 2000s meathead nu metal song. You know, those lyrics. Out in the distance, your fear is taking over. You see premonitions of me pulverizing. The time has come for all to witness total mayhem. This is war. No deep philosophical questions, no cutesy rhymes or lyrics. No, it's just, I'm gonna kick your ass. And that's Wardlow. It's perfect.
Yeah, no, it's, like I said, this is war, this is Wardlow. Like, this is perfect for him. And yeah, I guess I did, when I was thinking of like the lyrics and the way that the singer's singing, I was thinking more of like, that's where I got the Slipknot, like the Corey Taylor, because sometimes like he'll get really like screamy, but then he'll like actually sing and it sounds sort of mellow. But the Breaking Benjamin part of it totally makes sense as well. But yeah, no, that's like, yeah, what else is there really to say? I mean, dude's gonna come out, he's gonna cause destruction, he's gonna leave you in a pulp, and then he's gonna leave. And that's how war works. So go ahead.
Yeah. It's funny, though, we don't really hear this theme that often, do we? Because Wardlow doesn't wrestle that often in AEW. He's only had, like, I think 15 matches in the company to date, and some of those were tags and battle royals. So, you know, part of me is a bit impatient and wants to see more of Wardlow, Mordlow, if you will, but I also get that he's a long-term project. MJF is the focus right now, not him. So patience is a virtue when it comes to Mr. Mayhem, but I think he has all the tools to be a big-time player in wrestling. And when he does get that tap on the shoulder, he's going to be tremendous, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this dude's, I think he's a blue chipper. Like, he's got everything. And I don't know if you listen to the Unrestricted at all, their podcast, but he was on it recently, and the dude gets it. Like, he wants to go in there and beat people's asses, and that's the kind of wrestling he likes. That's what he studies. I think he gets it completely, exactly what he's supposed to be. And I think it's fine. Like, I too want to see him get better and become a more prominent player. And I think you're slowly starting to see that. But I mean, MJF, I'm in the camp that MJF is also a blue chipper and a guy that's going to be on top for a long, long time. So the way they're both kind of helping each other rise up is fun to watch, and it's going to make for some really cool battles down the line when they do finally split and that story does take place. So you'll really, it's almost like Batista and Triple H and how that played out back in the day. Very reminiscent to that. So, and I think, and both of those guys came out of it, obviously Triple H was already established, but Batista became a big star out of it. And I think that's probably what we're going to see a lot, something like here.
Yeah, it might not be the thumbs up, thumbs down like before,
right,
but
right.
It'll be fun regardless, I think.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
So we're going to change things up a bit now and play some themes that were done by outside artists. This first one is for the tag team Private Party, Isaiah Cassidy and Mark Quinn. I talked about their first theme at the beginning of the year, but since then they've gotten a new theme. This one is by Zelly Daniels, Stay Low Dom, and someone named R-I-Q-Q-Q. So Rick-ka-ka, I guess. This is called Shots.
Oh my God, is that Private Party?
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah, let's go! Woo! Force up another one. I'm about to set the club on fire with this one. Yeah, let's go! Let's go! Shots, 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 shots. Shots, shots, shots,
yeah,
shots,
yeah,
shots,
yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, made it out the streets and then we moved it to the bigger leagues. Now that haters perpetrating, working with the enemies. For the show, I take a shot at Jen and Drew for energy. Shut up the facility and give the people memories. Remember me? We got Michael, Jeffrey, Jordan, tendencies. Where we jumping off the rope into a new extremity. Better watch it, chick, I think she liking my identity.
She feeling me?
I'ma introduce her to my remedy.
Shots.
Oh my God, is that Private Party? You know, at first I was a bit disappointed with this one when they got it, because I liked the first one a lot, and the whole shots, 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 that reminds me of the song Shots by LMFAO. Shot, 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 shots, everybody, which... That song annoys the hell out of me. I hate that song, but over time, this did grow on me. I love the beat, I love the tempo, the flow of the rapping's pretty good, I like how smooth it sounds, the whole what we want, what we need, that's pretty fun. It references Gin and Juice, their tag finisher, so I really grew to enjoy this one, Steve.
Well, I'm glad you came around to it, because I haven't.
Oh.
I don't know if I'm a huge fan of this one. It's got a decent beat, and I think like when you hear it on TV, it comes off fine. And the whole intro, the shots intro, and oh my God, is that Private Party? Like it all, like that's all fine. But when I listened to the lyrics, it reminded me of some of those old, like, again, I'm probably aging myself here, but the No Limit Soldiers. You familiar with No Limit?
Oh yes,
We All We Got.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that's what this reminded me of, and not the good ones. My brother was a big No Limit guy back in high school, and that's all I had to listen to. And some of it makes me feel nauseous to my stomach, and that's kind of what I got out of this. I thought I do think the first one is better than this. I don't, like I said, I don't think it's bad, because when I listen to it on TV, I don't have this reaction. It's just kind of like, I like the other one better, but this is fine. But now that I've listened to the song and like listened to the lyrics, does not work for me.
Well, as someone who listened to Hootie Who for this podcast, I feel your pain when it comes to the No Limit Soldiers.
Look what I'm going through, dude.
Yeah. listen, if you like the song or not, that's your opinion. I don't care either way. To me, this still carries the same party vibes as the first one. It just does it in a different way. Like the first theme was very energetic and vivacious and over-the-top flashy and music for like the dance floor. This one, it's a tad more subdued with the production, not as much bombast as before, but still it has that element of style and swag and coolness that, to me, evokes the back of the club. You know, sitting down with drinks and the ladies behind the velvet rope, like a private party. So it better emphasizes that aspect of the gimmick and the name than the first one did, I think. But if you prefer the first one over this one, I'm not going to argue with you.
Yeah, it's still like the first one did as well. I mean, it fits their gimmick, and like the lyrics make sense for what they're trying to go for. But like, I don't know, it just, to me, it does it. Some guys, like some acts or wrestlers, you want to say, like, you can almost tell like how high they can get and how big they can get almost by their music. And to me, this sort of has a low ceiling. I don't know if that makes sense, but I don't know. I just said it, to me, it's really not something that hits me where I like to be hit. You know, it doesn't really get me excited at all. It fits what they're trying to do. that's fine. It's just, I guess it's just more of a personal preference that I'm not digging.
Well, I think that some styles of hip hop are more suitable for certain wrestlers than others. You know, like
sure.
This is not the same kind of song as Scorpio Sky's theme.
No.
They're similar in that they're very boastful theme songs, but Scorpio has more of an athletic, nose to the grind, work hard and be the best kind of thing, whereas Private Party is more of a club anthem. We're cool, ladies want to be with us. It's a little more acute with the braggadocio. And if you compare the two songs, the Scorpio Sky theme is more inclined for a guy on his way up. That's the intent. Whereas this theme is more of a character theme. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that you put that a lot better than I could have articulated. Basically, like the Scorpio Sky comparison is really good, because to me that is a dude that's trying to reach for it, that's trying to gain ground, that's trying to reach the top. And I feel like this theme for Private Party and their act, really, it's not about like moving up the ranks. It's just about being cool. And that's just something that's not really my thing, I guess. No one, very, very few people that know me think I'm cool. So.
it's funny. I was thinking about the stinger. Oh my God, is that Private Party? You know, what if other wrestlers had the stinger? Oh my God, is that Chaos Project? Oh my God, is that Allen Angels? You know, it doesn't have the same ring to it.
No. Oh my God, is that Alex Reynolds? No. Yeah, that's it. That part fits. That part fits. It's as far as like intros to songs, like I said, I really like a good intro, you instantly know it's them. You instantly know what you're getting. I guess I'm just not a big fan of what I'm getting from that point on.
Up next, we'll play the theme for the current and longest reigning AEW Women's Champion, Hikaru Shida. And Shida's theme is by someone named Tsubasa Shida. And if you're wondering, that's an odd coincidence, they're brother and sister. So there you go. Shida's theme is called Shining Samurai with 3 A's. Nakamura Batman. whenever I hear that intro, I think of Nakamura's New Japan theme, Subconscious.
Yeah.
Sounds very familiar, of course. But beyond that, with this one, it's that classic style of theme that so many Japanese wrestlers have, where they blend the modern-day rock music with the traditional Japanese elements, the strings, the flutes. It's kind of like, to me, a sister song to Benkei's theme in Dragon Gate, although that song does go a lot harder than this one. Now, normally, we'd hear a song like this and go, oh, American wrestling, so typical, giving the Japanese wrestler the song with the Japanese music in it. But considering this is Shida's own brother doing this, we'll give it a pass there, Steve.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, like, this feels like, this song feels like her personality. Just like for what I would think of her personality, like very, it's very upbeat. It's the traditional, like a lot of traditional tones, but also it seems very like upbeat and forward. Like once it gets going, it almost feels like kind of like a train engine, like kind of going like something like that. So always moving forward. It's very video gamey. I don't know. That's kind of what I got about it, and that might be from some of the traditional Japanese kind of music and instruments in that theme. The best part I thought of it where, like, I think it's about two thirds into it, it slows way down and it becomes like a smooth jazz.
Yeah.
Like, that was really, I'm obviously, you don't hear the entire theme when she's coming in. So that was kind of a surprise for me. But, I mean, it's a fine intro. I don't know if I would have the long, like the Nakamura type thing at the beginning. Because sometimes, especially watching on TV, it just seems like it's kind of long and unnecessary. Where if it just maybe, like, cut that to, like, a couple seconds and then go right into the intro, I think it might work better. But, I mean, I think it works just fine for her.
Yeah, it definitely fits her. That's for sure. Not just because she's Japanese, of course, but... You brought up, like, video games. Well, she's designed some of her gear based on video game characters. But really, her whole, like, presentation is that she is this badass warrior. And she has herself these traditional elements, like the robe and the kendo stick. And she does the bow and all that stuff. Lots of colors. Very heroic. And I think listening to the song, it covers all those bases. It sounds traditional. It sounds badass. It sounds colorful and heroic. So I think her theme is very well suited for her. And you mentioned as well the smooth jazz portion. Usually we only hear like the first minute or so of a theme during the entrance, but the full song is quite the ride.
Yeah.
And there are, you know, just multiple sections all over the place. It starts off with the Nakamura intro, then it goes into the traditional rock music section. Then about halfway through, there's this awesome guitar solo, and then it just completely changes over to the smooth jazz portion, and then it goes back to the traditional rock music, and then another guitar solo. So it goes in a lot of different directions here that normally you wouldn't hear at all during the entrance.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot going on here. I think for the most part it works. It might be kind of jarring going from part to part in some cases, but I mean, when you hear this theme, you think of her, and that's what you want. I mean, it just fits. So I think overall, solid theme.
Right. You know, I've always been confused by something in regards to Shida. It's her entrance video with the meditating human disco ball. Like,
yeah.
I've never understood why that's in there. It's a very strange visual.
Yeah, and I mean, it's very strange. It's like... almost like that giant dude from the day the Earth stood still. I think is that the movie that's called, like, the giant, like, but it's like a disco ball. So I guess that's the mystery, Andrew. You're the robot. You should be able to figure that out, right?
Well, some things are beyond even my understanding, I think. maybe since it shows up during the Nakamura intro, it's trying to do some sort of East Asian spiritual warrior thing, perhaps? I'm just spitballing here.
Yeah, hard to say. I couldn't even guess what that would mean, so we'll go with that.
Let's get back to the Mikey Ruckus themes now and play the theme for one of my favorite guys in AEW, Absolute Ricky Starks.
Hell yeah.
Ricky Stalks, as Taz would say. Ricky, of course, answered Cody's open challenge back during the summer for the TNT title, and since then, he's been absolute gold, no pun intended. His theme is called It's Live.
Yeah. The revolution is televised.
I'm just going to say this right now. This song is so fucking catchy. Mm-hmm. This gets stuck in my goddamn head. Such an earworm. But it's great. And it's great for Ricky because he's so charismatic and so cool and flashy, and you can't take your eyes off of him, that he needs a song that can match that. And sure, you can give him a hip-hop theme, but I think this is better because it's unique. No one else in the company has a theme like this. This stands out, and it's just as flashy and attention-grabbing as Ricky Starks is. It's tremendous, Steve. It's tremendous.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. This fits him perfectly. Like, absolutely perfectly. First of all, like you said, this dude has been incredible since he's been brought on Dynamite. I loved him when he was in NWA and Power. He was one of my favorite guys watching that show. So watching him come from there, and obviously like guys like Joe and other people have known him a lot longer than that, have seen his career, but I've only seen him in the last year or so, and he's quickly become one of my favorite dudes. I think this is the kind of guy that continues to get better and continues to grow. He could be on top of the promotion easily. Just great in-ring, does all the little things, great charisma, and this is the kind of theme that sort of encapsulates all that. Like you said, it's very flashy, and I wrote that this is the kind of, it makes it seem like this name should be like up in lights, flashing on the marquee, like a big bombastic, like just personality. And this theme just encapsulates all of those, fits his character to an absolute T. And yeah, I love it.
Yeah, and according to Mikey, the inspiration for this one was that Ricky was using Touch the Sky by Kanye West on the Indies.
Yeah.
And he wanted to incorporate the brass instruments into his new theme here, but he also wanted it to have more swagger, which it definitely does, you know, especially in that B section. Tons of swagger there, because that's the core of Ricky's whole persona, is his swagger.
Mm-hmm.
In the ring, on the mic, mugging to the camera, the clothing, the way he speaks. The guy is a showman through and through. And you mentioned his name being in the bright lights. That's perfect, because I kind of get like Vegas vibes from this song. Like an old school top act in Vegas. Dressed to Kill, big time show and presentation. The ladies, the gambling. Those images are in my head when I hear this song. And Ricky fits in like a glove with that whole motif, I feel. So a real great job here translating his essence into his theme.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't you just like see yourself, like you said, driving on the strip and you like, or walking on the strip and you come up to like Caesar's Palace or wherever it is, or the Igloo or the Bellagio, whatever, any of those big name places, and you just see his name like with just flashing lights all around the sign, and you hear that song and it makes sense. And you just kind of get that feeling like this dude's a big deal. Pay attention to him. Like, that's where I'm at with this.
And I love Ricky's entrance too, where he comes out and does the air guitar and the shovel step. He pumps his fists in tune with the music. Like, the guy is all in on incorporating the music with the entrance, which I think clearly means that he loves this song as much as we do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But Ricky's just the best. And I'm so glad he's in AEW right now. And I'm looking forward to 5 years from now when, knock on wood, him, Darby, Hangman, Wardlow, Sammy, they're all on top just running shit. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I mean, just think about, like, if the promotion continues to just build and grow, and God, they are loaded with so many young horses. They are, I mean, as long as everyone stays healthy, they're set for the next 10, 15 years, really. And that's without even talking about their ability to identify talent, like in the indies, like all these guys that have come up from dark that like a lot of people never heard of and now are major players. Like, it's, yeah, I can't wait. Hopefully the future remains bright.
Theme number 8, and this is for another tag team, The Butcher and the Blade with the Bunny. Or as the great Iron Mike Spears would say, the motherfucking Butcher, the motherfucking Blade, and the motherfucking Bunny. Their theme has the same name as their tag finisher. This is called Full Death. The Butcher. We'll be right back. So like with This Is War, when you have a song called Full Death, you kind of know what you're getting, don't you? Like, especially with this team, Butcher and the Blade don't look like techno fans to me. Not really a K-pop kind of group. Listen, they're big, scary-looking white dudes with a lot of tattoos and black leather and giant mustaches and creepy masks and monocles, and they brawl. It's gonna be metal, folks, okay? And it's a certified lock given who makes up the team as well, because the Butcher, Andy Williams, is the rhythm guitarist for the metalcore band Every Time I Die. So I don't think it was a tough process to figure out what this song was going to be, Steve.
Yeah, so my first thought was, I always thought that like Andy's band was the one that did this theme, so you're telling me they aren't?
No, this is all Mikey Ruckus.
This is all Mikey Ruckus, huh? That's interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, so without that, I guess, like, honestly, when you look at these two, I mean, you almost expect to see them come out to death metal, like you said. I mean, it'd be weird to have, like, a group like this come out to, like, oh my God, is that the Butcher and the Blade? Like, might be fun to see the Bunny, but, you know, those two dudes coming out would be weird. So, I mean, it fits that way. Very, very progressive metal kind of feel when you listen to this whole theme. It kind of has different movements, almost like a hardcore Opeth. I don't know if you're familiar with that band at all.
Well, I've heard of them, yeah.
Or Mastodon, something like that.
Yeah, I love
that.
Those guys, so, yeah.
So that's kind of the vibe I got for them. But yeah, another one that just fits. One thing, because again, I listened to them on a podcast, and when you listen to those two talk, you'd think their voices were flipped.
Yes.
You know, it's so weird. You hear the Blade talk, and he's got this like low, gravelly voice, and then like Andy, this big, burly dude that looks like a literal butcher, has like a almost like kind of an upbeat, like an uptick voice, and a not very deep. Like it's just weird to me.
Well, that's why the Butcher doesn't talk in AEW, you know?
Yes.
Hide the negatives, accentuate the positives.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You don't need to talk if you're a giant, evil, Teddy Roosevelt-looking motherfucker, okay? You can stay quiet. It's all right. But yeah, what I love about this theme is that at first it seems like your typical intense metal theme. The scary voiceover, the Butcher and the Blade, the sirens going off, danger, danger, bad dudes are coming. But this is not like the same two riff patterns over and over again. No, this is a full song with multiple sections, and the riffs and the drumming and the tempo and all that stuff just gets more and more intense and more fast-paced as it goes along. It's like an escalating onslaught of metal, which works with the title, Full Death. There are no half measures here. This goes all the way. So this does a great job of really getting the most out of this type of theme.
Yeah, and that's where I got like the Opeth reference, because like if you put this song like as an instrumental on one of their albums, it would fit. Like, because there's a lot of different like sections and movements and just different, and it builds and builds, and just like you said, so... Great, good theme. I don't really have much else to say.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much analysis to give with this one. It's very clear what it's all about. But I was wondering with this too, there's that added element of Butcher being a musician. Did he have any input with this theme at all? And someone did ask Mikey about this, and he said that it was a three-way text between himself, Butcher, and Blade. And the story of the song is that it's, quote, complete chaos, imagining being hacked in several pieces. And he sent that to the team, and they were happy with it.
I don't know if that's what I would probably think of if I was getting chopped up into different pieces, but I guess, hey, to each their own.
I also love that in AEW canon, Butcher and the Blade are actual butchers. Like, they cut meat for a living. And when they did the Falls Count Anywhere match with the Bucks a few months ago, it started with them in the kitchen cutting meat. I love that so much.
Oh, that's attention to details, man. That's why I love this thing.
Moving on now to the second to last theme of the episode here. And this is for Maxwell Jacob Friedman. MJF, one of the young stars of the company, and a rather polarizing figure among certain circles. Some people love him, some people hate him, but he's going to be around for a long time, so get used to him. MJF's theme is by R.W. Smith from the prestigious YouTube audio library. This is called Dig Deep.
I'm better than you, and you know it.
Steve, do you watch the show Succession at all?
Heard of it, never watched it.
Well, it's a great show, first of all. Yeah. And the theme song is great, too. It's this like nice, elegant piano arrangement and orchestral arrangement over like a hip-hop beat, which is kind of mimicking the story of the show, because it's about these super rich people who are in charge of this like mega corporation. They have estates, they have nice apartments, all the money in the world, pretty much, but there's also this undercurrent of ruthless aggression, if you will, and backstabbing and conflict. So it has this facade of pretension and wealth and high culture and high class, but underneath that, there's this layer of contention. And that's the same with MJF and this theme. It has the piano music on top, but underneath it is this pointed hip-hop beat. Again, MJF is the spoiled rich kid who gets everything he wants. But he's also this backstabbing, manipulating shithead who will do whatever it takes to win. So I don't think this was all on purpose, mind you, because this song came out a few years before Succession even aired. But it's a pretty neat coincidence, I'd say.
Yeah, no, it's the perfect thing. I mean, it fit. It's like Starks in a way. The song fits his character so well. Like, I wrote in my notes, this song is basically what it would sound like if a shithead walked into a party that thought he was the coolest dude in the world that you really wanted to punch in the face really, really hard. And that's the vibe I get from it. Like the whole, the classy piano beat over the hip hop beat, like you talked about. I mean, it's essentially like the upper class, like preppy, I guess, white kid who has never had to work for anything in his life, is now trying to act cool and like act hard and tough, and just no one's buying it. Everyone hates it. You just want to see him, like I said, get his face punched really, really hard. And it works like on that level so much.
Yeah, the vibe I get as well is like my Super Sweet 16. Like, remember that show?
Oh, yeah.
The kids are all spoiled and getting all these extravagant gifts and parties and whatnot. Or MTV Cribs. With the whole look at me and my nice stuff kind of thing. But what I also love about this is that it's from the YouTube audio library. Like, this is not some super expensive, you know, 5-star production here. This is from the free pile. So there's this wonderful irony here that plays into MJF's character. Like, he's supposed to be this super rich, you know, wealthy guy, but his theme song is copyright free. And that plays into him being two-faced. You know, he says one thing, but the background of his theme says another.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's a great observation. I love the intro, just the low because it's like everyone's like waiting for the next person to come out, and you hear it, and it's almost like you can't help but like, oh god, this guy, and you're like rolling your eyes, and it's just like, ugh, and it like that intro kind of, and then it goes into the remainder of the song with the more progressions and everything, and it just kind of, it fits him perfectly. Just oh God, please just shut this dude up and get him out of my sight. Like, that's what you think about when you hear this kind of song.
Yeah, yeah. And kudos to AEW as well for not drastically changing the song all that much or replacing it even, you know, because the only thing they've done is add the stinger. I'm better than you and you know it, and that's it. And that does take out the intro, but beyond that, it's the same song. And I know that Mikey Ruckus has said that he has no plans to replace this song at all until he's told to do so. And who knows, MJF might have this theme for the rest of his career. We'll see.
Do you like that they put his catchphrase in the beginning of it?
I'm indifferent to it. Like, I get why it's there. It makes sense. But if it wasn't there, I wouldn't really be bothered by it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of the same way. At first, when I heard them put the catchphrase in, I was like, man, that kind of just, like, it takes away that groan-inducing, like, just dread of him coming to the stage because you don't want to see him. But I get why they did it. I mean, it's a good catchphrase and it gets the heat. So, I mean, it's grown on me. I would have probably preferred them not putting it in, but I totally get why they would.
So the final theme of the episode here, and this is for the man who just lost the AEW World Championship after a pretty fantastic reign. It's John Moxley, who is one of the biggest stars in the company. Moxley's theme is by a band called Violent Idols. Very appropriate. This is called Unscripted Violence. So I really like the beginning of this theme. The feedback and distortion, and it gets louder and louder, and then the... I like all that stuff. And it's very much a John Moxley theme. It's straightforward, in-your-face, no-nonsense hard rock. My main issue, though, is that, you know, after a while, it does get pretty monotonous and repetitive and not all that dynamic. But then again, you know, Moxley isn't a very dynamic, super deep, complex guy himself. You know, he's a very straightforward, no frills, no nonsense character. But as far as my personal enjoyment of the theme goes, it does start to feel samey after a while, Steve.
Yeah, no, I agree with you about the intro. I love the feedback and just that plugging in the amp and that sound you get from it going right into the theme. This is a theme that grew on me. I mean, I was one that when he first broke out in the New Japan, that theme I thought kicked all the asses. And I was really hoping he would bring that to AEW. He didn't, and I was a little disappointed, but over time this has kind of caught on, and I think it's like, because his theme in New Japan was, I mean, very similar in the fact that it was like no nonsense in your face. It was slower, more subdued, heavy riffs. It was like, like, to me, it was like the difference between, like, say, a Black Sabbath versus like a Motley Crue, like American versus overseas heavy metal, where it's a lot more doom and gloom and dread and like evil almost. Whereas the American side of things, it's more in your face, like manic, like crazy, like party, like just keeps coming over and over and over. And I think that's kind of what you get with these two. Like the Mox in Japan was much more like sort of tone, I won't say, I guess toned down isn't the word, but I think you know what I mean, right? And then in America and AEW, he's been much more, I won't say crazy, but like just sort of not crazy Dean Ambrose, but like manic Jon Moxley. Like there's something wrong. There's a screw loose in there, but he's almost like devious.
Unhinged.
Unhinged. Yeah. Thank you. Much better with words than I am.
Yeah, that New Japan theme, Death Rider, I love that song so much. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's a good shout with the Black Sabbath comparison, because it does sound like classic 70s Black Sabbath, that heavy, bluesy sound.
Yeah.
But still that same ballpark, you know, genre-wise with the other theme. So yeah, this one, it's much more frantic and furious, like Moxley is a lot of times. But, you know, if you think about it, the music has never really been the most important part of the Moxie entrance.
No.
It's always been about him coming out through the crowd and psyching himself up and his facial mannerisms and his tics. Like, he's always the focus and what he does, and the music is just extra. So even though I'm not a big fan of this theme, I don't think it detracts from him at all, but I also don't think it's an essential component either.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, thinking back, we were talking at the beginning of this about the when AEW actually had crowds, seems like forever ago. But like, it was to the point where there was like legit Mox pops. Like, soon as his theme hit and him coming through this, it just felt like, obviously very little is ever going to approach like an Austin pop, but like, his music would hit and he'd come through the crowd and like the places would just erupt, and it was getting bigger and bigger. So I'm hoping that maybe once the crowds start to come back, whenever that happens, maybe that'll continue to grow, because I think he's been great. And the theme is definitely great for that kind of pop, especially with him coming through the crowd.
Right. Especially with that intro too.
Yeah.
You know, you hear the feedback start and it's like, oh, here we go. Which is what you want, of course. But yeah, I mean, Moxley, he's the man. I'm so glad he's doing this thing and wrestling the way he wants to wrestle and talking the way he wants to talk. And I mean, even when he does something that isn't that great, like with MJF's lawyer or whatever, it just takes like one great promo or match to get him right back on track. So, you know, he's the man.
I mean, he's the kind of guy that announces that his wife's pregnant during a kick-ass promo. That's really all you need to know about Jon Moxley.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Music of the Mat. Thank you so much for listening. And Steve, thank you so much for being here. Your first time on the show, and I guess you can say that you were all elite. But no, seriously, this was a lot of fun, and you were great today. So thanks for coming on.
Well, depending on who you ask, if me being all elite might be a good thing or a bad thing, but I do appreciate you asked me. This was a lot of fun. I'd be happy to do it again. I've enjoyed it. Hopefully you have too.
I have, definitely. Yeah. I guess you can say that you've jumped ship then.
Oh, I jumped ship a long time ago. I guess this is the coming out part.
Okay. Any plugs you want to give? Go right ahead.
I mean, like I said, I mentioned before, I had a couple buddies. We used to do, we would watch movies with wrestlers in them and talk about them. Kind of pandemic stuff got busy and work stuff got busy. But Mid-Card Matinee, we do have podcasts out there. There's about 20 episodes. If you want to check that out, be one of the select few to listen to that. My shout out to my boys, Nick and Dane Pavlosky. One of our super fans, Dr. MacArthur, got to give her a shout out too. But, other than that, like I said, if you hear rumors that there's a WWE pay-per-view, because you never really can be sure nowadays, rest assured your guy Steve's probably going to be reviewing them. So voiceofwrestling.com, check out those.
Just throw the bat signal up and you'll be there to save the day. In times of great hardship, only one man can review King Corbin matches.
In times of trouble, when a review is needed, let it be Steve.
Let it be Steve. Amen. And Music of the Mat is, of course, part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find all the great podcasts on there at voicesofwrestling.com. Follow the show on Twitter at Music of the Mat. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew T. Rich. You can discuss this and other topics at the VOW Discord. That's voicesofwrestling.com/discord. If you want to donate to the podcast, you can do that. Just go to voicesofwrestling.com/donate and click the big donate button beneath the name Music of the Mat. If you donate, hey, thanks so much. You're awesome. And of course, rate, review, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many other places. Steve, thank you again, and I'll see you around.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it. I'm sure we'll talk soon.
All right, for Steve Case, I'm Andrew Rich, and I'll see you next time on Music of the Mat. Take care, guys.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.